Welcome back to One Brain at a Time. I'm Dr. K.
And I'm Dr. J.
Well, today is a very exciting episode. And Dr. J, do you want to tell us why?
I sure do. This is our first official guest on our podcast. And woo-hoo! I couldn't be more delighted.
I'd like to introduce retired Sergeant First Class Butch Edmonds.
Welcome, Butch.
Thank you.
So, Butch, where I really would like to tap in today with you is your prior military experience. And, you know, I have shared that at one point in my career, I worked with the military. And I think what's really important is to hear from somebody like you that has prior service and help folks understand what you learned about brain health and, you know, how you have taken that knowledge and passed it forward and really informed people. I know that you have helped many understand that it's about healthcare. It's not about being mental or behavioral. It's about our brain. And in the military, it can tend to be a stigma if you have mental health symptoms. Could you start us off, please, with just a little bit of your background in the military?
Absolutely. There's a lot to unpack in what you just said, Jerry. That was a lot. But it's all, I had 24 years total time in service. I started as an active duty Marine, infantry Marine. Then I took a break of about 10 years, and then I came back in on the Army side and was in the Army for 19 years and a little change. By government math, it works out to 24 years, or at least that's what they pay me for. It was really only 23 years and a couple months. I'd first like to highlight your comment about spending a little time in the military, you really underplay your impact. In what you did in your time working with the military. And just for me as an individual, and I know there are so many more, there are countless others, but for me as an individual, your impact can be summed up as I'm alive. I wouldn't be without you. I have a 5-year-old son that I love to play with and I'm engaged and I'm there with, which I wouldn't have been without you. I still have a wife that loves me dearly and a great family, which I wouldn't have had without you. So not only do I have life, but most importantly, I have a quality of life that before meeting you was incomprehensible. I had no concept of the quality of life that I was missing. And that's because I was a staunch, devoted, anti-PTSD, mental health, all of those things. I came up in a time in the military where if you complained about anything related to brain health or mental issues, you were weak. Period. The end. You were weak. Get away from us. We can't stomach that kind of weakness. And I was so bad that the mandatory training, as the military has started to evolve, which it's a, as we know, it's a very slow process, but the mandatory trainings that the military was implementing to adjust the social framework and the emotional intelligence of the military, I was frequently excused from those trainings because I always was the sharpshooter who was quick to take advantage of the opportunity to point out that it's just weakness. Suck it up and move on. Quit whining about your weakness. Quit forcing us to embrace a weakness that's only going to compromise us. And so that was me before meeting you. And I had actually, because of the effects of the long, in my life that PTSD had, some of the tolls that it had taken, I had been through several other counselors. Some of it was mandatory. There were a few times my sergeant major had enough of me and he forced me. And there were other times, there were a couple times it was voluntary because there were some cracks I knew something was wrong. I didn't know what it was. And I surely wasn't going to admit it was PTSD.
Butch, can I ask a quick question just because
yes, ma'am,
this is
I'm
the
sorry.
First... No. Oh, gosh, no. This is the first time you and I have met. So, of course, I have 100 questions already with just what you've shared. How old were you when you joined the military?
So I was actually 17 when I went to Marine Corps boot camp at Parris Island. It was unique.
Wow.
At the time that I went, I believe the law was that you could go to an active duty military basic training at age 17, but you had to turn 18 prior to your projected graduation date. And they had to adjust my departure time to go to Parris Island. And my 18th birthday was exactly 1 week before my original projected graduation. So I was all
wow.
of 18 years old for a week when I became a United States Marine.
Wow. And you were just a baby.
I was. I was a baby. And looking back, wow, was I a baby.
So when you talk about having the cracks, in quotes, show up, at what age do you think that started?
To be honest, once I became educated, or more aware of brain health issues, the effects of PTSD, I can actually track the first visible symptom, the first significant fracture back to 1989, August of 1989, which was shortly after the first, I think the VA calls it a Class A incident. It was a combat related or a combat type related incident. And once I became educated and aware, the first crack, I didn't acknowledge it or know it, but I could see it in my conduct about 3 weeks after that incident. But the ones that actually generated concern for me started probably when I was early 40s, maybe mid 40s. And I'm 53 now for reference sake. But it was
still a baby, still a baby,
still a baby. the one crack that really started to get my attention that generated me to start to seek some counseling on my own. I find it funny, but, I would watch a TV commercial, and if it had any kind of sappy tendencies to it, I would sit and I would sob. I would just start sobbing uncontrollably. And when I say uncontrollably, I was furious with myself that I'm sobbing like a little baby watching a TV commercial.
Yeah.
And I had no comprehension.
Wow.
I couldn't, like,
super
what is
common.
Going on with me? And so there were little things like that that became frustrating. Like, this is not, I'm a warrior. Like, I'm strong. What is going on? Why am I sobbing like a little girl watching a stupid TV commercial? And I actually almost quit watching TV almost altogether. But I started, one of my coworkers in the military had completed his education to become a counselor. And I went to him first, say, hey, I need to understand what's going on. I think once we started to talk a little bit, he realized that he had no desire whatsoever to try and unpack the garbage that was in my background. And he said, you know, I think you should probably go to the VA and see a counselor. And I did voluntarily try that the first time. And within the first 20 minutes, the counselor I went to see broached the subject of PTSD with me. And I shut her down in a heartbeat. And she quickly turned a different direction. And obviously that counseling turned out not to be very effective at all. So there were a few incidences like that. And then Jody came along.
And let me just clarify that what I what my job was with the military was not being a therapist. I would assess and evaluate and then make recommendations. And so I had received a call from somebody in a higher chain of command and saying that they had an unhappy soldier. And so in my job, my position was that nobody had to come see me. Nobody was going to be forced to come see me. And it was that safe space. So I said to this leader, I said, I don't call soldiers. They call me if they want to. And so he said, well, let me call him back and see if he'll call you. And that's when I got the call from Butch. And we were on the phone for at least an hour, and he agreed to meet with me. And
can I ask?
Yeah.
Because I'm curious, Butch, the way you were talking earlier about the different therapists that you work with and stuff, I'm guessing at that point when you called her, you were probably, here we go again, this is going to be a waste of my time kind of thing? Or were you in a different space? Like,
no, he was just very mad. He was not happy on the phone.
Oh, were you?
Oh, he was not happy.
I was ordered to call Jody.
Oh, okay.
And so it was, anyway.
And go ahead. I want to jump on this if I can, Jody. It was another attempt because I was angry for reasons that were legitimate. The circumstance that was occurring was an egregious violation of our moral ethics and values in the military. And I was very angry about that. And the organization, for right or wrong reasons, not really relevant, but they were trying to tap dance around the issue and downplay it. And my whole career, I was devoted to upholding our values, morals, and ethics. So I was exceptionally angry without getting into much detail. And when I was forced to call Jody, the senior leader that made that command was also trying to place on me the fact that it was relative to poor mental health. And that just made me even angrier.
So, oh, sure.
So poor Jody, she gets this call from me. I'm really mad about an issue that was legitimate. And then I'm even angrier because they're trying to make it a mental health issue, that incident in and of itself had nothing to do with mental health or brain health.
Sure.
However, I couldn't be more thankful for that process because it led to the best day of my life.
Well, what happened was I said, would you be willing to meet with me? But
you were a little more specific than just, are you willing to meet? You also asked me if my wife could come.
Yes.
Which turned out to be the most, it was pure brilliance on your part. And I think you knew exactly what you were doing. So when she asked, to fast forward, we had the meeting in my office. Jody came down. My wife was there. And at the time, my four-month-old son, because we had just had our first child, They were there in the office, and Jody sat down, and she just kind of had what I perceived to be a casual chit-chat session with me, just kind of breaking the ice, getting to know you. And the way I remember it may not be exactly right, so correct me if I'm wrong, Jody, but after about 15 minutes of that initial conversation chit-chat, she abruptly stopped talking to me, turned straight away from me, looked at my wife, and she went through a list of 10 or 12 activities, and she said, he does this, and this is how he does that, and this is... And I can remember she's talking through this list of things with my wife, validating her assumptions of what was going on with me. And I'm getting indignant. I'm angry. I'm wondering how in the world this person could know this much about my personal life. How can you intrude? My privacy has been violated. And I'm just getting... And by the time she was done, though, I was so defeated that somebody could sit there and talk to me for 15 minutes and know so much about me privately. And also, I could see the impact that it was having on my wife. All the horrible things that my wife was having to deal with on a day-to-day basis were just unpacked in a matter of minutes in front of her and placed on her lap. And I could see the effect on my wife's face, like how it was almost like she was able to unload because somebody finally realized the horror of the life she was having to endure with somebody that was suffering from chronic PTSD.
Right.
And then Jody simply turned around to me and she said, Butch, look, you're suffering from chronic PTSD. And she went on to explain some of the physiology of that to me. And then she made a very simple statement. She said, Butch, if I was a cardiologist or if I was your general care practitioner and I told you you had a problem with the heart, and if you don't get to your cardiologist post-haste, you're going to die. Would you go to your cardiologist? Well, absolutely, I'd go to my. And she said, Butch, your brain is an organ. The trauma you endured damaged that organ. If you continue to leave it untreated, these things are going to continue, likely get worse, and there's a whole list of things that we can go through of what the outcome of this could be. And when the way she confronted me with factual evidence, the way she was able to so accurately list the things that were relative to my family life, and I could see the effect, having my wife there and seeing the effect of those things on her face really hit me hard. But then just the facts and the science of it, there was no, I don't always have the best words, but there was no emotional phooey about it.
Wait a minute. Did you say emotional phooey?
That's what
I am going to steal that. I am stealing emotional phooey. But can I just say that as you're talking, I'm thinking that you, as well as other people that Dr. J and myself have worked with, that moment when somebody understands that the brain is an organ just like any other organ, and you start to understand that this is not something you can control. It's just like telling somebody with that cardiac, get over it. So what? Your heart beats too fast or it doesn't beat. Get over it. Can you even imagine that happening? And yet that happens day after day after day. And as what you were saying, kind of the culture of the military promotes that suck it up, buttercup, which has to, you know, there's a part of that that has to be present, I'm sure, for safety and all of that. But when it comes to brain health.
You know, strikes me too, and I say this all the time. I remember being in a meeting with another soldier and her leadership. And I did the same thing with her. And I said, and this goes on your life and this and this and this. And she looked at me and she goes, did you read my VA medical notes? And I said, I don't even know what your last name is. And the thing is that once you start to realize that this is not a personal thing, this is not an intrinsic flaw in who you are, our brain is command post to how we function. And if it is not functioning on all cylinders, we're going to see it in thoughts. We're going to see it in behaviors. And it just was classic post-traumatic stress. And, you know, it was that space that I saw two people who, in just my first meeting, lovely, lovely humans, but I could palpate their struggle. Right. And it wasn't anybody's fault. And so bringing it into the neuroscience, you know, it just clicked. And then, you know, I made my recommendations.
And it was one of my favorite parts of that particular day. Once it all came together and I was forced to actually face the truth that PTSD is real and I was suffering, not just me, but my family was suffering extensively from the effects of it. And I took a knee and I acknowledged, yep, I got it. I finally see it. Jody was great because she immediately motivated me, because there were some, I think there were some critical care concerns at that time, of the critical place I was in mental health wise or brain health wise, relative to the incident that brought us together. The stress of that incident, was going to compromise the condition of PTSD, was going to fracture me. And there was a catastrophic event coming. No doubt in my mind, had Jody and I not met, based on the incident that brought us together, there would have been a catastrophic outcome. There's no question in my mind. But the funny thing is, at the end of that meeting, we were together for 2 or 3 hours that day, Jody, I think.
I think it was 4 hours and 15 minutes.
Well, there you go.
Wow.
My wife and
4 hours and 15 minutes?
It was an epic journey.
It was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Butch, you really made her work, huh?
Oh, that's the understatement of the century.
No emotional fooey here.
Jody earned her dime that day. And here's the outcome from the patient perspective. This is the validation that she earned her dime. Kelly and I left and went and had lunch, and we went back to the house. And I think by the time we got back to the house, it was 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And about 5:30, I looked at my wife and I said, you know, I'm tired. I'm going to go lay down. And I did. And I didn't wake up till 10 o'clock the next morning.
That's right, too. Wow. Yes.
Prior to that day.
You switched over.
Yep.
That nervous system calmed.
Prior to that day, wow. When I slept 4 hours, that was a good night's sleep for me. 2 to 4 hours was about all I ever slept. And that had been consistent for 22, 23 years. Well, maybe even a little longer. But it had been there a while. And I slept. And I can remember when I woke up and it's the next morning and I'm disoriented. And I actually called Jody and, all right, you evil witch, what did you do to me? I slept for 16 hours. What did you do to me, you evil creature?
I remember that.
And then the next night, wow. I slept for 14 hours. It was such a flip, so quick.
So can I just say that That is such an incredible example of your nervous system going from hypervigilance. For 22 years, you said you hadn't slept well?
Well, since 1989. And so this was 2019.
Whatever the math is, because I'm not very good at it. But anyways, just to see that switch over, and I can't help but think as you're telling that story, you weren't alone anymore in this journey. Like someone got it. Someone validated it. Someone reflected back to you. And that's pretty powerful stuff right there, to have your body just go into complete like exhale mode.
It was unquestionably the most life-changing event. It was equal parts of glorious and frustrating. And I say that the frustrating part was, and it wasn't necessarily that day, but probably the one of the greatest parts of the journey that Jody started for me that day was that she got me into an intensive clinical care program. And she was also able to get me a little bit of reprieve from the organization itself and the incident that was ongoing. But she got me into an intensive clinical care program, home base, the Boston Red Sox Charitable Foundation for service members, and I think law enforcement members that have issues with PTSD. It was a two-week intensive clinical care program, and that literally saved my life. But even more importantly, and probably the most important, and this was so... Jody told me, she said, Butch, when you go down there, she said, make sure before you leave, you take 2 weeks of vacation on the back end. So that when you come home, you can kind of reset with your family for that 2 weeks before you have to go back to work. And my wife will jump up and down on a trampoline and tell you, and I'll tell you, the best 2 weeks of life that I've ever had, that we've ever had as a family unit. It was extraordinary. The quality of life as a human being, as a father, as a husband. It was so good to actually enjoy life. And that intensive clinical care program and first acknowledging the reality of PTSD, going to the intensive clinical care program, getting that care, and packing that stuff up and giving me the ability to be present in life. It was life-changing. And actually, I was living life, which I hadn't done. I had been a drone just flying through space for 30 years. So I think that's the actual math. You made me think about it a little bit.
I was going to say, what you just talked about is often what I describe as surviving and then switching over into living. That difference between surviving your life and then living your life, it's very profound.
And I also think that when you are in a program like home base, that the one variable that you all share is your military experience, whether you're in veteran status or still active duty. And that is a culture that is all unto itself. And I just know that, having talked to other folks that participated, that, and I think this happened to you too, Butch, I can't remember, but others had said to me how they had developed really close friendships, and that people literally came from all over the country, and there were people that came from other parts of the world. But that it was because it was intensive and you were doing this work in groups and living together, and that there was just bonds that were created during this intensive outpatient program.
So I went in April of 2019, and to this day, there are four of the 12 that I still communicate with on a near daily basis.
Yeah, that's...
We became intertwined as if we had served together in actual combat. And to that, I would like to say and hopefully, I really do hope that there are some warriors out there, some service members, law enforcement, first responders, and really anybody. It's odd. I talked to my physical therapist yesterday, just a civilian physical therapist, telling her about the podcast and brain health. And she was moved to tears because her mother is suffering. And we had a great conversation. And I hope this podcast, I hope there are people living. And I want to say about taking a knee and getting care. If you think you're brave, if you've been a warrior, been whatever, a firefighter, a law enforcement officer, and you've run towards gunfire, and therefore you think you're brave, you are. There's no question about that.
Right.
But you will find your cowardice when you take a knee and get, and I hope this translates well. I had, the military was just a fit for me. I never fit well in the civilian world. The 10-year break I took, the military just fit for me. And it's a unique thing. The switch, you flip the switch and you just do what has to be done. It's not always a lot of conscious thought involved. The fear becomes not irrelevant thing. It keeps you sharp and on your toes, but it's not an inhibitor. I never knew true fear until I went to that intensive clinical care program and I wasn't forced to. But if I wanted to get something out of the program, I had to face the monster of that PTSD thing that I had denied existed for 30 years. And it was the hardest thing I think I've ever had to do. And one of the things that I said near the end was, they asked some of the things that we would do to, continue moving forward. And the thing that was most profound to me was stop being a coward. Because that's really what I was doing, was being a coward, and not facing, that monster in my mind.
But I also think that it was your belief that if you looked at it, it meant that you were weak. And that's something that is just not accepted. And the bottom line to it all is that the courage, the greatest courage, is when we can take care of ourselves and we can be completely and utterly honest with who we are and where we're at in life and not try to do it on our own.
But can I say also too, that what strikes me is for you, Butch, for me, for you, Sissy, or anyone who's navigated life with buried trauma, that you, before that conversation with Dr. J, you didn't even realize there was something going on. So how could you have gotten support for that? You know what I mean? It's like what I find time and time again is when folks navigate their world and create narratives, are able to dissociate the emotion and survive, back to what I was saying about surviving versus living, most people don't even realize that there's a dragon to slay. And most of us create the narratives in our brain, you know, in our thoughts, to kind of validate the maladaptive behavior that we have to survive.
And so 100%, but this is a civilian observing the military. is that it's a culture, and there are beliefs. And what I was talking about was that what Butch's block was, or the wall that he kept on running into, was his belief that it would be a sign of weakness,
right,
if he ever looked at it and found out that he actually did have post-traumatic stress. And so and as Butch was saying earlier on, you know, he was tough. You know, he communicated that to people who, it was so entrenched in him,
right,
that there was nowhere to go. And I just think that it was the perfect timing in his life to hear what I had to say.
And I was going to say, there was a place to go. Your office for 4 hours and 15
no, it
minutes.
It was the recruiting office. I had to drive to him.
Yeah, she had to come to me.
And I think that's kind of divine timing, too.
100%.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I believe in that, because we're not able... I was just having this conversation with a client recently who has that mindset. I want it solved now. I don't want to be in this space anymore. I want it now. And I'm like, that's actually what's causing the chaos. Is it? So the fact that Butch, you had, what's that program called again?
Home base.
And they're based out of Boston,
yep,
right?
Correct. Charlestown.
That's right. I've seen some literature on them, but thank goodness there was a space and place for you to be able to refer, Sissy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
How many people don't have that opportunity?
And if we're really going to go down the path of divine intervention, I had never heard of Home Base. But I had gone to a training in Connecticut where they were giving free CEUs for licensure. Uh-huh. And all I had to pay for was my motel room. And it was deployment of psychology funded program. So it was military influence. And Home Base was there. And so I'm like, oh, what is it that you do? And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So Butch was the first person that I recommended go to Home Base.
Wow. And Butch, have you recommended that to other soldiers?
Every soldier that is willing to acknowledge that PTSD is a traumatic issue they have to resolve, I would 100%. And I have. Everybody yeah. that I've been able to talk to, and I shouldn't say everybody, because not necessarily everybody needs that level or immediate right. intensive care. And the unique thing I do want to point out, initially when I contacted Home Base, they told me the wait was a little bit over a year.
Oh, wow.
Jody got me in 4 weeks with her influence that she had obtained in a short period of time. She got me there in 4 weeks.
She has the power of persuasion.
Yeah,
Butch,
that's another.
Doesn't she?
That's another one of those nuggets of divine timing and intervention. And I think had she not gotten me in, had they not taken me in that window of time, I'm fearful of what the outcome may have been, because the care was so crucial and necessary at that very time. And yes,
yeah.
It was unquestionably divine intervention.
And when you came back, you had said to me, if anybody wants to know, if anybody wants to hear my experience, I'm more than happy. You can tell them my name. You can whatever. And I did. There were a few other folks that I know had reached out to you and decided to go.
And there were a few that we sat down together in your office with
yep.
and talked,
yep.
I remember. And the yep. most frustrating thing Hindsight at this point in time for me is that I haven't reached enough. I just haven't reached enough. And so the frustrating aspects of hindsight being 2020 and where I am today, there aren't words that are adequate enough to convey what quality of life actually is.
Yeah.
Because I had no concept of what it was to be present in my marriage, what it was to be a loving, emotionally available father. I had no concept whatsoever. I had zero emotional capabilities. And to suddenly be freed to be present in life, to be a loving, emotional father, just to enjoy the quality of life, there aren't words that will adequately convey the value of that. And so I regret that I can't, I feel ineffective at my inability to motivate others to acknowledge.
Well, you're doing it right here, Butch. Well, your voice is going to get out. I can tell you that people literally from around the world have listened to this podcast.
I pray fervently that it reaches many. And most importantly, and even if it doesn't reach many, I hope it reaches the one that was in a critical, that is in a critical space like I was, that will just take that one step. And I know how terrifying it is. It's funny. I'll run it gunfire all day long. But when you tell me to say I have a problem with my brain health that I have to go get help for, wait just a minute now.
You're going to make me have feelings and watch Lifetime movies? What?
It's terrifying. It's humorous to me at this point how terrifying it was to sit in some of those group therapy sessions. And a funny thing that I just want to include, home base does not allow you to drive yourself. You have to be dropped off.
Brilliant.
And
it's free, by the way.
It is free.
Anybody that gets in, you don't have to pay a thing. The only thing the only thing they ask you is that you can't have transport. You cannot drive a car there and have it there. You have to be dropped off.
And that's because after about the first 4 hours of day one, all of us would have driven away. There's no question in my mind. It was the hardest thing I've done in life. No question about it. But the outcome, I'm here. I can smile.
Can I ask both of you, because as you were saying prior to that order to talk to Dr. J, if you would be willing to, because I think it would be helpful for anyone listening to this, especially that list of 10 or 15 things, Sissy, that you were saying, you do this, you do that. Mm-hmm. Maybe 4 or 5, just because I think it's important. As I mentioned prior, you would have been Butch. I'm fine. There's nothing going on. But it seems like once some of those things were pointed out, and maybe if you could highlight global, not Butch specific, perhaps, but just for people to have a reference point of what some of those things might be.
Sure. So,
and you can make it me specific, Dr. J, because I want to be an open book, but everybody, I'm here. Use me as an example, and it's exactly why I'm here.
I honestly can't remember. Do you remember any of the things I said? Because I can't.
My anger and how short-tempered I was.
Oh, agitation, irritation. Yep. That's it.
The lack of sleep, the fact that I never slept.
Yes. Yeah.
Even when I was home, I wasn't present. Like I was physically present, but I was never emotionally present.
Yeah.
And there were some
Were you drinking?
That was the one thing that was not.
Because that's usually.
I occasionally socially drank, but yeah. I intentionally avoided too much drinking, and I didn't have any substance use with the exception of nicotine. I did chew tobacco at the time quite excessively, which I've quit, so that's another good thing.
Good.
And actually, I don't drink at all. There's a lot of healthy changes, but trying to remember the other ones.
So it depends on the nervous system that I'm working with. Agitation, irritation, anger are absolute symptomology, and I break it down even more to really distress tolerance. People don't have the distress tolerance to be able to manage, even sometimes just everyday life living challenges. It becomes overwhelming. The crying that you were talking about, Butch, there are what I call unhealthy strategies of survival. So oftentimes with the brains I work with, we've got people pleasers, perfectionists, I'm sorry. They say that all the time. I mean, there are just certain verbal and nonverbal cues that I can a lot of times detect whether it's post-traumatic stress or not, but that there's some trauma in the nervous system.
And one of the other things that was unique about my situation that I think you also described accurately, not just not physically present at home, but I would also just live in my man cave. I'd come home, like my wife acknowledged that I was there, and then I'd disappear into my man cave. And I'd stay in my man cave till 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I'd come get in bed and sleep for 2 hours and get up and go to work.
Right.
So
yeah, it was a real disconnect.
Just out of curiosity, Butch, what was your nutrition like? Were you a healthy eater?
I was a chaotic eater. The only thing that was really the only healthy offset that provided some support to my system was the level of physical fitness, which was demanded for military service. And mine wasn't even great. I really struggled motivation to keep my physical fitness at an appropriate level, but I did because I was forced to. So that was probably one of the only healthy offsets I had at the time.
So you propped up your brain health by physical, but you think about how long that system was pushed.
Yeah.
For how long, and then to be able to have intervention, and then to be able to rebound. And as you said, the quality of your life just improved tenfold. And I think the other thing is, and I love the fact, because I don't think I've ever had the opportunity to talk with anyone who my sister has worked with, but one of the things that stands out hugely is that you catch yourself when you start to say mental health and you bring it back to brain health, because that is something she has instilled in me, and I instill in people who I work with too, because at the end of the day, the whole term mental health should be thrown out because it is brain health.
Well, and it also carries shame.
Yes.
You know, no other organ is mental. Like, why did we label the brain mental? I mean, it's ridiculous. And so it perpetuates that internal fear that I'm not enough. Somehow somebody will see that I'm not enough. And it seems ridiculous that just one word, but that one word added to all the other shame, can tip somebody to stay in the path that they've been living and not seek help.
Yeah.
And getting away, making it a brain health issue, for me personally, and making the analogy that if you had another defective organ in your system, that whole conversation of making it an organ that was broken, that needed medical intervention to get healthy, gave me the ability, because for me and for many of my ilk, it's weakness. It's having to acknowledge we are weak per se. And when I break my arm, it's not hard for me to acknowledge that weakness. The challenge that we have is because it's an unseen.
Right. The invisible wound.
I can't see your broken brain. So yeah. When you tell me, how do I know you're not just scamming because you don't want to work hard today?
Right.
That's framing the stigma, and that's the stigma that conveys the weakness. I don't believe you. I can't see the broken brain. So you're just scamming because you're lazy today. And that frames that weakness. And that's the thing that's terrible to face, but make it in an organ. And more importantly than just making it the organ, being able to explain the physiology of that organ and the effects of the broken parts of it. Other therapists had tried to broach the subject of PTSD with me, and I crushed them and sent them on their way.
You met your match, Butch.
Oh, did I ever.
You were not going to get past the sissy sparkle.
And the funny thing is, she's so sweet and humble and almost shy and reserved and gentle and just mildly spoken human, and she just unpacked me. And it's funny because I'm this physically imposing. I've got this catastrophic command voice and presence. And when you come in my presence, I'm in charge. And don't you forget that.
To be a fly on that wall.
Oh, you would have laughed.
I would have been like, Butch, you don't know what I know is about to happen.
It was like, the only thing I can compare it to is a high school wrestler who thinks they can get in the ring with a judo master. And in a few seconds, they're laying on their back in excruciating pain, wondering what happened. I thought I was the champ.
Oh, my gosh.
I just had the image of Hong Kong Fooey.
But, you know, I am so grateful, so, so grateful that you were willing to come on to this podcast with us, because your message is so important. And as you said, you know, we're targeting the military, and I also work with law enforcement and other first responders. And that's another culture. That's another place that, you know, I'm seeing a definite shift, but that I can manage it. That's not that bad. And what I say to folks is that this is not a normal day in the life of a human. Uniform does not protect your brain. And so it's just grasping. And I just want to add another piece that it's, Kristen, Dr. K, you had mentioned this, is that it's outside of first responders, outside of military. It's anybody. It's everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's understanding. It's when you experience that relative helplessness and your back brain kicks in and the chemical release into your bloodstream. That is what trauma is. It's not about not being able to manage a situation. And for those people, I remember I had some folks in my office one day, and they were talking about another person in their unit and how he was this and that because he had PTSD, and we were on the same deployment and we didn't have it. And I stopped them And I said to them, how do you know you don't have post-traumatic stress? And if you know somebody is struggling, why would you talk poorly about them? And it's just that place that I have post-traumatic stress. I would wish nobody to have this diagnosis, but I'll tell you something. If I didn't have it, I wouldn't be here today and I wouldn't be talking to Butch. And it's, I've got this ability to understand the thought patterns and the internal disruption. And so my message is anybody that feels that they have had moments or longer time of feeling that helplessness, please get checked out. Because on your conscious level, you may feel that you're perfectly fine. And your thoughts may fire that you're perfectly fine. But go to somebody who is really qualified to assess and evaluate. Because we have 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day. And we believe all our thoughts. And I'm going to tell you that there are times that they're not true.
Most of them. Especially around trauma stuff.
Right, right.
And as you were just talking, I was thinking real quick that as you were saying about folks who have been deployed together and then come back and one person is showing or walking through PTSD and how others are like, we were there. I was thinking of family systems because the majority of my work have been with children and how coming out of the same household, people can, you know,
have kids, different experiences.
Have different experiences. And how long, like when you were talking about PTSD, it wasn't until I turned 50 that I started dealing with my PTSD. And I was like, wait, I'm the one who doesn't have problems. I don't have anything going on. You're the one who has PTSD. And then all of a sudden, so that's why it's really important and why I was kind of driving home that point as you were talking, Butch, that a lot of us who have PTSD don't even realize it. And so even if you're listening to somebody saying this checklist, you're like, oh, yeah, but that's no big, like, whatever. That's not really me. And something I can really, really, really relate to with you, Butch, is when you were talking about the commercials, because I could spend all day hearing horrific things with children and not miss a beat. And then I'd come home and it was a damn commercial. And I was like, why am I getting so emotional over this? And it was the heartfelt, emotional, hooey stuff that was starting to get in. And I was like, what's up with this? This is ridiculous. Like, and I was saying it to myself, suck it up, Buttercup, like pull it together. But it's when that emotional dissociation stops working.
Yeah.
Yep. And you can't fight the fight anymore.
Nope.
And that hypervigilance has to give way. And so I so appreciate the opportunity to meet you, Butch, and then to also hear the story. And of course, from a selfish standpoint, hear how my sister impacted your life because she has mine as well. And I don't want to get into the emotional hooey stuff because I'll start getting teary, but it's been pretty incredible to hear this journey.
And if I can, for the listeners out there that might be listening, and you guys might decide to cut this piece out, I'm not sure. But I do, to your point, Dr. K, when Dr. J first came to my office, I didn't have any problems. She brought a whole suitcase of them and dumped them on me, because prior to her arrival, I was problem free. Some of the glaringly obvious problems that I actually had, and I only want to say this to provide some more specific examples of elements that might hit a listener, other than we've already mentioned. These are the hard ones to talk about. my current wife is actually my fourth wife. And the only reason she's still with me is because she has to be the most stubborn human on the planet. I gave her a gazillion reasons to leave me, tried to force her to leave me prior to Jody meeting us. Was not faithful. Some of the conducts that I, some of the things that I did to, not consciously aware of what I was doing or why I was doing them, but things to, you know, satiate the cravings in my brain, from the damage the brain had suffered without treatment for the PTSD. Some of the things I did, sexual misconduct related. I don't know why any human wanted to be around me. And a lot of people didn't want to be around me, to be honest. Not very many. The people that have stuck around me in my life have to be the most stubborn people on the planet. And I'm thankful for them and I love them to death. But prior to Jody coming around, there was, you know, when you think of good people and bad people, there was really nothing good about me per se. I was good at what I did, and some of my professional attributes made me appear to be good. I loved my soldiers and I took great care of them, but it was because I had a creed to follow, not because I was actually emotionally invested, but I understood the outcome from a mechanism perspective. Taking care of these people makes them better warriors and the machine functions better. It wasn't anything great about me. So to the listeners out there that, if you've heard anything, I kind of resemble that. That concerns me. If you're even wondering, and at a point you made earlier, Dr. K, you don't know you have a problem until it confronts you. And for me, it was divine. Jody coming in, our paths crossing when they did, perfect timing. And in my case, and I think the unfortunate thing for a lot of my peers, the timing has to be right. We have to be very close to being broken.
Right.
Before there's any hope that we can open up enough to hear you're carrying a damaged brain in your skull and you need to fix it. And that's the unfortunate part about many of my ilk, but anybody, if you've heard and you wonder, find a therapist. And that's the second. I think I had been primed for a few years to hear the message. And for me, it took a Dr. J level character that was able to convey the message appropriately to reach me, because other therapists had tried. And there were other people in my sphere of influences that had tried, and I crushed them and drove them away with that nonsense, that weak-minded nonsense. It took
the emotional hooey or fooey.
Keep that emotional fooey away from me. And it took a Dr. J to come into my bubble and break it down in a way that I couldn't deny. I just simply could not deny it. But even more importantly, I would say take a partner, take a close friend, a partner, somebody that's stuck to you, even though maybe they shouldn't have, because when Dr. J listed the things to my wife, she abruptly turned away from me as if I didn't exist, just straight ignored me and confronted my wife with this list of information. And I was able to physically see the impact of that garbage that was my conduct on my wife. When I saw what it was doing, that was a real wake-up call. Even before I understood the broken organ that my brain was, the thing that really, really opened me up to receive the message was seeing the effect that I was having on my wife And the fact that I was actually depriving her of life, those were, so take a partner with you. If you have somebody, take a partner, and hopefully you find a good therapist or counselor to approach the subject, and explore it and unpack it, because the outcome, if it's, on the back end, the hindsight being 2020, there's so much to life. Life can be so enjoyable when you're present in it, when you're emotionally available to partake in it, when you can actually love a significant other, when you can love a child, when you can develop friendships and be a relatively good person. Life is so enjoyable. I wish I had words that could effectively convey it.
Well, I think you just did.
Amen.
That was excellent, Butch. That was really, really well said.
Thank you.
All right. Well, listen, this has been a joyous episode. Some heavy duty stuff, but really, really important also. Butch, again, thank you so, so much for coming today. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Butch.
Thank you, Dr. K. It was, I only have life because of you. So thank you.